Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, where you hear about the business of the casino entertainment industry from the people who make it happen. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week we hear from Chris Justice, the president of the Gaming Solutions Division of Global Payments, on how his company provides innovative wallets, allowing for transparent payment processing for online players. The GGB Podcast is brought to you by iGamingPlayer.com, the leading affiliate marketing service for land-based and online casinos, as well as sportsbooks in North America. Payment processing has become an increasingly important part of the gaming industry, both online and land-based. Since cash is less visible, methods of transferring money are becoming more innovative and interesting. Christopher Justice is president of the Gaming Solutions Division of Global Payments. A 25-year veteran of the payments industry, Justice recently joined Global Payments, which provides a wide range of services to the gaming industry, both land-based and online. Global Payments specializes in creating online wallets that allow players to send and receive payments transparently from online gaming sites. He spoke with me from his offices in Las Vegas in July. Christopher Justice, thanks for joining us on the podcast today. It's good to finally get to talk to you. I understand your company has been growing a lot in the last few years, and we're excited about you getting involved in our magazine as well as our UNLV Gaming and Hospitality Education Series.
Thanks a lot, Roger. Happy to be here. Very much a pleasure.
So let's start a little bit about payment processing online, which is your expertise, obviously. You know, we've been following online gaming since 2013 when it was legalized here in New Jersey. But there's still, to this day, there's still quite a bit of difficulty in making and receiving payments for online gaming. Why is that still a problem?
Well, I think, Roger, it's really going to depend on the type of payment that you're talking about, right? Because I think in the card world, it's definitely a significant issue. Because the question really around credit card payments is that while the financial institution may underwrite a cardholder for a particular credit line, that doesn't necessarily mean that the bank is willing to stand behind that cardholder when placing a bet.
Sure.
Right? It's one thing to try to spend $500 on something from Best Buy, but it's quite another thing to put $5,000 down on your favorite team to win in Saturday's contest. And if you don't win, right, the bank doesn't necessarily want to make good on that particular transaction.
Right.
Coupled with, I think, the banks still have, a significant apprehension about being in the gaming market just due to the reputational risk associated with those transactions. So, albeit, right, gaming players certainly have high credit limits. They've got a, good standing within the community. At the same time, the banks are restricting the authorizations on those particular funds. And that's one area where I think that Global Payments really comes in from an iGaming, iLottery, sports betting perspective, is that today we deal with close to 500 brick-and-mortar and digital casinos all over the U.S. and Canada, but we also deal with every one of the iGaming properties that's in New Jersey. And today we are approximately 40 to 60%, depending on the site, of the actual wallet, because our players that enter actually sign up for our VIP preferred program, where we underwrite the players ourselves.
Okay.
And so we provide that high level of authorization that the players expect when trying to participate in gaming. And it's also that high level of approval rate that the sites really need to keep going. So I think all of that really boils down to the company's long-standing expertise, technology, and processes related to the gaming industry, which we've participated in now for over 20 years.
Okay, I see. So there was a code developed several years ago that recognized payments for legal online gaming. And I'm sorry, I forget the numbers, but why wasn't that the answer?
Part of what that really is so Visa creates, or Visa and MasterCard create, what are called merchant category codes. And those are really codes associated with the data requirements, processing capability, and the rates associated with doing a particular amount of processing in a particular market. Every April, every October, Visa and MasterCard make changes to really adjust to market conditions and what have you. So while they have created merchant category codes for iGaming, and now since the repeal of PASPA, they've created new merchant category codes as well for sports betting. The fact is, right, they got the rules and they created the infrastructure. That still doesn't require a financial institution who's holding all of the risk for the cardholder to actually participate.
Okay.
And so that's the reason why, even though it exists, it still doesn't mean Wells Fargo, Bank of America, Chase, Citi, et cetera, actually want to participate in the bet.
Right. Okay. So I understand that the some of the stipulations that were in the UIGA law that was passed in the early 2000s, calls gambling illegal, gambling transactions illegal, and that hasn't changed yet. Is that part of the problem, that banks are still a little leery, that there's some conflicting laws there?
Well, I don't think it's necessarily the conflicting laws as much as it just boils down to banks are very risk averse.
Uh-huh.
So even when you think about the repeal of PASPA, Visa and MasterCard again have come out and created new rules allowing those particular transactions to occur in legal jurisdictions like New Jersey, for example,
uh-huh.
or Delaware. The fact is, though, a financial institution still doesn't necessarily want to participate.
I see. Okay.
And there's nothing that a federal law or even a Visa and MasterCard rule will do to require a bank to extend credit in an area where they don't necessarily want to participate.
Okay, great. So where does social casino stand in this? I know, it's a big money game. People buy these kind of worthless chips all the time, and they use their credit cards to buy them. Is this a problem for social casinos as well?
Not really. I think even that, daily fantasy sports even, because those transactions aren't considered gambling, approval rates are much, much higher for credit card transactions. So you've got, folks that are going to go out and buy power packs, power-ups, whatever special tool or equipment or whatever you need to buy in order to advance your character or advance the game. But because there's no real money coming back, those transactions are approved at, roughly retail levels.
Okay.
Not nearly as much of an issue.
Okay.
But from a global payments perspective, right, whether it's the iGaming sites, sports betting, iLotteries, or frankly anything that involves like real money play,
mm-hmm.
we do provide that robust solution that delivers the high approval rates that the market desires and certainly that meets the player's expectation for participation.
Okay, great. So is there anything that the industry can do to make banks more comfortable accepting payments for online gaming?
Frankly, I think it's really unlikely. We've had a number of conversations with card issuers about the market, and frankly, you can really look at it, right? Players understand the fact that if you leave a casino holding a bag, whether that's for a marker or some other kind of activity, right, that is at least communicated through the community, so that nobody really wants to let you play if they know you're not going to make good on the bets that you're participating in, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, effectively, you could say players tend to pay their gambling debts before they're going to pay their mortgage.
Right. Right.
So it's typically considered a high risk transaction, but yet at the end of the day, most players really do make good on their obligations. But from the conversations that we have with financial institutions on the issuing side, that still doesn't give them the comfort level that they need to be able to go back to their board of directors and others to say, we're going to participate in the market.
Okay.
So I think it's a far cry from, for them to be able to do anything.
Right. Okay.
The other point, though, is when you think about it, too, we're in the second longest bull run in history, right? The economy is growing. Things are great, and we've got low approval rates even still. They have edged up, by the way, but they're still pretty low.
Mm-hmm.
I just wonder, when the bubble pops, right, as all bubbles do, right, what are financial institutions going to go and do at that point, right? My expectation is approval rates would be even constrained even further because they've got so many other things that they're going to wind up dealing with. So if it's at this level during a good economy, hard
So you mentioned PASPA a couple of times. How is the legalization of sports betting going to impact online gaming payments in any way?
Overall, right, we're kind of repeating the theme from earlier. I don't think it's going to do anything to improve approval rates on the credit card and debit card approval rate side. Visa and MasterCard have made changes, but from a meeting that we were in with the association several weeks ago, right, they don't foresee any change from what a financial institution would do.
Right.
From the VIP preferred side of things with the solution that we provide, we're still providing approval rates exceeding 94% across all of the locations that we service. So I think, sports betting from our perspective, as it rolls out across the various jurisdictions, whether it's brick and mortar or mobile or e-commerce, basically any of the various models that they produce, we've still got the ability to provide the financial stability of an $18 billion company standing behind underwriting the players. We've got 20 years worth of experience, the technology to underwrite and manage the risk, and certainly the appetite to offer robust solutions to the online market. And today we deal with all the top brands, whether it's, you've probably seen announcements out relative to, our participation with Caesars, Ocean that just opened, mm-hmm. Hard Rock, the Pennsylvania and Georgia iLotteries. So we've certainly got an appetite to be out there and help drive, these businesses forward.
So you're based in Nevada, so you're probably like me. I've got half a dozen sports betting apps on my phone, but I still have to go into a casino or a bar or whatever to make payments or cash out a winning payment. Is that going to change anytime soon in Nevada and then across the country?
Well, I would certainly hope so, right? I think, a lot of the reason that it is like it is because of really regulatory constraints. And I wonder now, as sports betting is going to be going out nationwide, right? We got five states, a couple live and several that are right on the cusp that are going to be adding a lot of competition to the Nevada market. So I would think that the regulators would have to take a step back and start looking at, right, how do the rules and regulations need to be written to, frankly, meet a player's expectation for frictionless commerce, right? If I can go through and buy dog food from Amazon.com and have it delivered to my house by an Uber driver within 4 hours, mm-hmm. I should be able to function in other ways on my mobile device. So
right.
From a sports betting perspective, my expectations would be, right, I might have to sign up by going down to the casino, but
right.
Once I'm there and active, I should be able to fund my wallet the same way I fund my wallet in every other jurisdiction. And I would think competition is probably going to have to drive some of that stuff.
Sure.
The other part of it is I also think that the regulators have to pay attention. You brought up social gaming earlier. When you look at all of the social games that are out there, not just social casino games, but other games, Game of War, King of Avalon, all of these other apps that literally are extracting hundreds of millions of dollars in entertainment value right into other channels. As a regulator and somebody who's looking to drive tax revenues for the state, I would think that folks would want to start to pay attention to those other channels, right, is competition for this market, and they would therefore want to put regulations in place to make it easier for folks to participate.
Well, of course, in New Jersey, we already do have the ability to fund your wallet, through your mobile devices in the iGaming area. Do you think once they get sports betting, that will be easier to do in the sports betting arena?
If the regulations will allow it, absolutely. Right? We would plug up any of the sports betting, the legalized sports betting facilities, and help them get it. Effectively get plugged into the infrastructure that we've got of millions of registered VIP preferred players who could effectively all start playing immediately.
I just finished reading a story about the Wire Act and how the repeal of PASPA has impacted that, and apparently not very much. Is that going to be an issue in terms of payments online for sports betting?
I actually don't think so. From my reading of the law, it does appear that the Supreme Court, I think for the first time, has really said that in order for a federal law to be violated, which would include the Wire Act, you effectively have to create a criminal offense or violate the underlying state law. So therefore, if sports betting is legal in New Jersey, then you can participate via mobile or other things using the using that infrastructure and not violate the Wire Act.
Right.
However, if you were in Utah, for example, and placed as a similar wager, then yes, you would violate not only Utah state law, but you would also violate the Wire Act.
Okay, great.
That's my interpretation, right?
Sure.
I certainly suggest, right, anybody listening to this right. Get their own legal opinion, but right. that's our perspective.
So tell us a little bit more about Global Payments and how you work hand-in-hand with the industry. I know you work with both land-based and online casinos.
Oh, absolutely. Look, Global Payments is an $18 billion company that operates in 30 countries around the world. We process over 11 billion payments. So part of our really goal as a business is to help drive commerce and leveraging technology to drive commerce. So from a gaming perspective, we really strive to integrate the digital and physical channels together to make commerce much easier for cardholders or for players just in general. So we do work hand in hand with certainly in the iGaming space, with the operators, with the platforms, with basically the entire ecosystem, trying to make it easy for folks to enter and enroll and get started, all the while providing a series of tools and capabilities to really help to promote responsible gaming as a whole.
Do you work specifically with some of the bigger iGaming companies, say the 888 Betfair's Stars Group of the world?
All of them, yes, sir.
Okay. Do you believe that the global payment solutions are a step above some of your competitors?
Oh, absolutely. One, I think the proof is in our performance. So when I look at just the market share that we have in terms of share of wallet in the iGaming space, it's above and beyond any other payment method.
Okay.
And in fact, it's really the only guaranteed form of payment that allows a player to participate. So once a player is enrolled and has a limit issued by us, they can go from site to site, property to property, and play immediately. Unlike a credit card, where you may have a credit card limit,
right.
You don't necessarily know if the bank is going to authorize your particular transaction.
Okay.
In the case of VIP preferred players, if they're signed up and they have a limit, assuming they're also in good standing, then they get to play immediately. So I guess I look at it and say that, you know, our entire business is really focused in and around the gaming market. So we've got the people, processes, and technology to manage the risk, underwriting, et cetera. Our call centers are 24/7 that are specifically focused on gaming. So that's whether helping a player handle a transaction or to explain to them the transactions and things that they've done, or helping the casino and the operator from a technical perspective to eliminate whatever errors that can occur.
Okay.
But certainly we feel that as the business evolves with the expansion of iGaming, iLottery, and sports, we are really excited about the convergence of all of these channels and the ability to allow our VIP preferred players to participate in all of them.
Well, there's no question that the payment systems are changing rapidly and really converging upon each other. So let's stay in touch so we can figure out how Global Payments plays in this market, and we'll be interested to hear what the developments are in the future.
That would be terrific.
Thanks for the time, Chris. I appreciate it, and we'll be in touch very, very soon.
Sounds good, Roger. Hey, thanks a bunch. Really appreciate your time.
We hope you enjoyed this edition of the GGB Podcast, brought to you by iGamingPlayer.com, the leading affiliate marketing service for land-based and online casinos in North America. To learn more about the gaming industry, visit GGBMagazine.com, or for a weekly update, visit GGBNews.com. Follow us on Twitter at Global Gaming Biz, or on LinkedIn and Facebook at Global Gaming Business Magazine. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week on the Global Gaming Business Podcast.